Hare Krishna. Okay, so 15th chapter, we are going to start today, first verse. And as we know, 15th chapter is very, very popular. So anyone knows when 15th chapter is specially narrated or read or shared, discussed? Anyone knows? Huh?
Yes, Prabhu, what's the question?
The 15th chapter is very popular during which month?
Adhikamas.
Purushottam month. Adhikamas, yeah.
Adhikamas, yeah, everyone knows that. So we are going to go through the 15th verse and 15th chapter, and it is very important actually, okay? So let's see, obviously, we won't rush through it, so let's try to see how many verses we can cover today. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Urdhvamulam Adarshakam Ashvattam Prahuravyayam Tandam Siyasya Parnani Vastam Veda Savedavit. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, it is said that there is an impenetrable banyan tree that has its roots upward and its branches down, and his leaves are the Vedic hymns. One who knows this tree is the knower of the Vedas. After the discussion of the importance of Bhakti Yoga, one may question, what about the Vedas? It is explained in this chapter that the purpose of Vedic study is to understand Krishna. Therefore, one who is in Krishna consciousness, who is engaged in devotional service, already knows the Vedas. The entanglement of this material world is compared here to a banyan tree. For one who is engaged in physical activities, there is no end to the banyan tree. He wanders from one branch to another, to another, to another. The tree of this material world has no end, and for one who is attached to this tree, there is no possibility of liberation. The Vedic hymns, meant for elevating themselves are called the leaves of this tree. This tree's roots grow upward because they begin from Brahma, from where Brahma is located, the topmost planet of this universe. If one can understand this indestructible tree of illusion, then one can get out of it. This process of extrication should be understood. In the previous chapters, it has been explained that there are many processes by which to get out of the material entanglement. And up to the 13th chapter, we have seen that devotional service to the Supreme Lord is the best way. Now, the basic principle of devotional service is detachment from material activities and attachment to the transcendental service of the Lord. The process of breaking attachment to the material world is discussed in the beginning of this chapter. The root of this material existence grows upward. This means that it begins from the total material substance, from the topmost planet of the universe. From there, the whole universe is expanded with so many branches representing the various planetary systems. The fruits represent the results of the living entity's activities, namely religion, economic development, sense education, and liberation. Now, there is no ready experience in this world of a tree situated with its branches down and its root upwards. But there is such a thing. That tree can be found beside a reservoir of water. You can see that the tree on the bank reflect upon the water with their branches down and roots up. In other words, the tree of this material world is only a reflection of the reality of the spiritual world. This reflection of the spiritual world is situated on desire, just as a tree's reflection is situated on water. Desire is the cause of things being situated in this reflected material light. One who wants to get out of this material existence must know this tree thoroughly through analytical study. Then he can cut off his relationship with it. This tree, being the reflection of the real tree, is an exact replica. Everything is there in the spiritual world. The impersonal is like Brahman to be, take Brahman to be the root of this material tree. And from the root, according to Sankhya philosophy, come Prakriti, Purusha, then the three gunas, then the five gross material elements, then the 10 senses, mind, etc. In this way, they divide up the whole material world into 24 elements. If Brahman is the center of all manifestation, then this material world is a manifestation of the center by 180 degrees. And the other 180 degrees constitute the spiritual world. The material world is a perverted reflection, so the spiritual world must have the same variegatedness, but in reality. The Prakriti is the external energy of the Supreme Lord, and the Purusha is the Supreme Lord himself, and that is explained in Bhagavad Gita. Since this manifestation is material, it is temporary. A reflection is temporary, for it is sometimes seen and sometimes not seen. But the origin from where the reflection is reflected is eternal. The material reflection of the reality has to be cut off. When it is said that a person knows the Vedas, it is assumed that he knows how to cut off the attachment to this material world. If one knows that process, he actually knows the Vedas. One who is attracted by the ritualistic formulas of the Vedas is attracted by the beautiful green leaves of the tree. He does not exactly know the purpose of the Vedas. The purpose of Vedas, as disclosed by personality of Godhead himself, is to cut down this reflected tree and attain the real tree of the spiritual world. So any question or comment on this? Okay, next. Yeah, Srikumar too, would you like to?
Text 2. Adha Sordhavam Prastara Sasya Sakha Guna Pravadha Vishraya Pravadaha Adha Sa Mulanri Anusana Sanai Karma Karmanu Mandini, Anitya Luke. The branches of this tree extend downward and upward, nourished by the three modes of the material nature. The twigs are the objects of the senses. This tree also has roots going down, and these are bound to be the fruitive action of human society. Purpose. The description of the banyan tree is further explained here. Its branches spread in all directions. In the lower part, there are variegated manifestations of living entities, human beings, animals, horses, cows, dogs, cats, etc. These are situated on the lower parts of the branches, whereas on the upper parts are higher forms of living entities, the demigods, Gandharavas, and many other higher species of life. As the tree is nourished by water, so this tree is nourished by the three modes of material nature. Sometimes we find that a tract of land is barren for want of sufficient water, and sometimes a tract is very green. Similarly, where particular modes of material nature are proportionately greater in quantity, the different species of life are manifested accordingly. The twigs of the tree are considered to be the sense objects. The development of the different modes of nature, we develop different senses, and by the senses we enjoy different varieties of sense objects. The tips of the branches are the senses, the ears, nose, eyes, etc., which are attached to the enjoyment of different sense of objects. The twigs are sound, form, touch, and so on, the sense objects. The subsidiary roots are attachments and aversions, which are byproducts of different varieties of suffering and sense enjoyment. The tendency towards pity and impiety are considered to develop from these secondary roots, which spread in all directions. The real root is from the Brahma Loka, and the other roots are the human planetary system. After one enjoys the results of virtuous activities in the upper planetary system, He comes down to the earth and renews his karma or fruitive activities for a promotion. This planet of human beings is considered the field of activity.
Okay. So, any question? Okay, next. Yes, Mithu Prabhu and Mataji, are you there?
Yes, Prabhuji, I am here. Prabhuji is not feeling well, so Prabhuji is not here, Prabhuji. He is home, but he is not joining the class. I am here.
Okay.
You want me to read, Prabhuji?
Yeah.
Chapter 15, verse number 384. Na rupama aye ashyeha. प्रपद्ये यतः प्रवृत्तिः Translation. The real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world. No one can understand where it ends, where it begins, or where its foundation is. But with determination, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. Thereafter, one must seek the place from which, having gone, one never returns, and there surrender to the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, from whom everything began and from everything has extended since time immemorial. Purpose. It is now clearly stated that the real form of this Vanindri cannot be understood in this material world. Since the root is upward, the extension of the real tree is at other end. When entangled with the material expansions of the tree, one cannot see how far the tree extends, nor can one see the beginning of this tree. Yet one has to find out the cause. I am the son of my father is the son of such and such a person, etc. By searching in this way, one comes to Brahma, who is generated by Garbhadaksha Vishnu. Finally, in this way, when one reaches the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, that is the end of research work. One has to search out that origin of this tree, the Supreme Personality of the Godhead, through the association of the persons who are in knowledge of that Supreme Personality of the Godhead. Then by understanding, one becomes gradually detached from this false reflection of the reality, and by knowledge, one can cut off the connection and actually become situated in the real truth. The word asanga is very important in this connection because the attachment for sense enjoyment and lording it over the material nature is very strong. Therefore, one must learn detachment by discussion of the spiritual science based on authoritative scriptures, and one must hear from persons who are actually in knowledge. As a result of such discussion in the association of the devotees, one comes to the Supreme Personality of the Godhead. Then the first thing one must do is surrender to Him. The description of that place when having gone, one never returns to this place, reflected tree is given here. The Supreme Personality of the Godhead, Krishna, is the original root from which everything has emanated. To gain the favor of the Personality of the Godhead, one has only to surrender, and this is a result of performing devotional service by hearing, chanting, etc. is the cause of the extension of the material world. This has already been explained by the Lord Himself. Aham sarvasya prabhavaha, and the origin of everything. Therefore, to get out of the entanglement of the strong buoyancy of material life, one must surrender to Krishna. As soon as one surrenders unto Krishna, one becomes detached automatically from this material extension. Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Okay. So, any comment or question? What is the sloka number? We just finished 15th verse, chapter 3 to 4.
Chapter 15.
15.
Okay. 15.34.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, next verse. Yeah, Aditra.
Yes. 15.5. Okay. Nirmana moha jita sanga dosha. अध्यात्मवृत्त्या विनिवृत्तकामाः द्वन्द्वैर्विमुक्ताः सुखदुःखसमज्ञैर् गच्छन्ति अमूधाः पदम् अव्ययम् तत् translation. Those who are free from false prestige, illusion and false association, who understand the eternal, who are done with material lust, who are freed from the dualities of happiness and distress, and who, unbewildered, know how to surrender unto the Supreme Person, attain to that eternal kingdom. Purport. The surrendering process is described here very nicely. The first qualification is that one should not be deluded by pride, because the conditioned soul is puffed up, thinking himself the lord of material nature. It is very difficult for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of God. One should know by the cultivation of real knowledge that he is not the lord of material nature. The Supreme Personality of God is the Lord. When one is free from delusion caused by pride, he can begin the process of surrender. For one who is always expecting some honor in this material world, it is not possible to surrender to the Supreme Person. Pride is due to illusion. For although one comes here, stays for a brief time and then goes away, he has the foolish notion that he is the Lord of the world. He thus makes all things complicated and he is always in trouble. The whole world moves under this impression. People are considering the land, this earth, to belong to human society, and they have divided the land under the false impression that they are the proprietors. One has to get out of this false notion that human society is the proprietor of this world. When one is freed from such a false notion, he becomes free from all the false associations caused by familial, social and national affection. These faulty associations bind one to this material world. After this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. One has to cultivate knowledge of what is actually his own and what is actually not his own. And when one has an understanding of things as they are, he becomes free from all dual conceptions such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain. He becomes full in knowledge. Then it is possible for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of God. Very well.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, at the end it is mentioned that he becomes full in knowledge and then it is possible for him to surrender to the Supreme Personality of God. So does it mean that we are not surrendered? Why are we? See, like it is, here it is, it gives the impression, this purport gives the impression that if you want to surrender, you have to give up your pride. That means that one has to give one's ego. So, but we know that we have not given up our ego. We have not given up our pride. So then how can we surrender to the Supreme Lord?
We are in the process of surrender, Prabhu. We are not completely surrendered.
Yes, okay. Okay, I wanted to ask Swati Babaji, are you there? She mentioned she was going to join, but she won't be able to speak. So, not sure if she has joined or not. Anyways. Hare Krishna, Mataji, you are there?
Yes.
Jai, Hari Bol. Welcome back, Mataji.
Thank you.
So I hope everything is going good.
Yes.
Okay. So I won't, you know, ask you to speak, but yeah, at least wanted to hear your voice for a few seconds. Okay. Great, Mataji. So, okay. Yeah, as Ujjala Mataji said, we are in the process of surrender. That means we are not surrendered, basically. So what do you think? Is it possible to surrender?
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so I will once again I will read the last few sentences of Prabhupada. One has to get out of this false notion that human society is the proprietor of this world. When one is free from such a false notion, he becomes free from all false associations caused by familial, social, and national affections. These faulty associations bind one to this material world. After this stage, one has to develop spiritual knowledge. One has to cultivate knowledge of what is actually his own and what is actually not his own. And when one has an understanding of things as they are, he becomes free from all real conceptions such as happiness and distress, pleasure and pain. He becomes fully knowledge, then it is possible for him to surrender to the Supreme Krishna Kripa. So basically, okay, you know, one thing is very clear from this purport that we have not yet surrendered to the Supreme Person of Godhead. We are in the process of surrender, but it's a very low level of surrender. It's a basic level of surrender. And so what is the basic level of surrender?
At least accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead rather than any other processes.
Okay. Yeah. Then what else? What else have we surrendered? I think all the devotees who have practiced Krishna consciousness since the last couple of years or more than that, they can share, you know, what they have surrendered till now. So, is everyone being really humble? They have got surrendered?
I feel we have a long way to go, so probably we have an idea what we have to surrender, but it still looks like we have a long way to go.
Yeah. So, post-dated check. We have got post-dated check, you know, but there is no confirmation that the money will come. So, it is like, yeah, we have an idea of what we have to surrender, but how much we have surrendered, no one is talking about that. What you have given up in Krishna consciousness. So see, I think every devotee should answer this question and don't think that, you know, by saying that, well, we are in the process of surrender and many things to come. Don't try to be humble now. You know, I think it's a straightforward question to all of you. And at least something you have surrendered, you know, certain things you have surrendered, I'm pretty sure about it. So please express very clearly. Okay. I don't know why you are not answering, you know, but let me ask questions and devotees can answer. So how many of you have left non-vegetarian and become vegetarian?
Okay, yeah, happily.
All of us.
Now answers are coming, right? So that is one, you know, one form of surrender. How many of you have given up the worship of demigods?
Yes.
Everyone.
Okay. Yes. Given up what?
The worship of demigods. Like, you know, to consider them as equal as Krishna. At least that concept you have given up. Although you might be, sometimes you might be visiting temples on certain occasions of different demigods, but we know that Krishna is the Supreme and they are the servants of Krishna. So that conception, because see, in India, to give up that conception, to come out of that, that's a major surrender. I mean, obviously, you know, with the level of bhakti from Shraddha to Prema, that's an insignificant surrender. But at least to give up that concept and to have faith in Krishna, that itself is a big thing, at least in the beginning stage, right? So that surrender is also there. How many of you have given up smoking, drinking? You know, I don't know if you were doing it earlier, but or you have given up onion and garlic. So I'm pretty sure every one of you.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah.
No.
How many of you are willing to accept the Guru or have already accepted a guru? I think all of you.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
How many of you are following the instructions of a guru? I think all of you.
Okay.
But that
right?
Is not perfect, not perfect.
That, see, we are counting the surrender at a lower level. You know, the surrender obviously will increase from Shraddha to Prema. We know that.
Okay.
Even at the state of, yeah, so even at Asakti, Ruchi, Asakti also, there is some, you know, there is some anartha is there. And the surrender is not complete. You know, it's not so complete. How many of you have accepted to chant the holy name in spite of chanting mechanically, sometimes getting, you know, bored from it? No, or you have probably accepted the path of life, you know, bhakti as the path of life, the main focus in your life.
Yeah.
I'm sure all of you.
Yeah, majority will.
Yeah, so see, that to accept someone as a guru itself in Kali Yuga, that itself is a big thing. Now, whether you superficially accept someone as guru, you know, just want to call and, you know, just want to make a show that we have accepted a guru, but do not follow the instruction, that's a different thing. But at the basic level, by at least accepting the fact that we want to chant 16 rounds and to abstain from the regulative principles, so that means that everyone is following Srila Prabhupada at a basic level. Okay? And then, you know, some are reading books, Prabhupada books regularly, some are hearing the classes regularly. So depending on different devotees' level of surrender, they have sacrificed many things. Initially, you know, for some of the devotees, parents were God, right? But now, for all of us, we know that parents are actually servants of God. So God is actually, the guru is the representative of God, and we have to follow the guru. We should not follow our parents. If they are asking to do us which things, you know, which are not favorable for Krishna consciousness, so we are not supposed to follow. That is what Prabhupada says very clearly. I think most of you are doing that. Right? If your parents are asking you not to follow, you know, or they are creating some obstacle, then, you know, I don't think that anyone will be agreeing to that. So this is also another major surrender, you know, because most of us were thinking like that earlier, that parents are God, they should be worshipped. Now, it's a different thing that the children never followed the parents, at least in this generation, you know. But internally, they all believe that, okay, parents are God for us. Okay, so that concept is also gone. Then, certain misconceptions we had, you know, another surrender, major surrender is that to accept a sampradaya, which is out of your own sampradaya. Like, you know, for example, I was not following, you know, like, but I was connected to Vallabh sampradaya, you know, being a Gujarati and my mother is worshipping. I visited Nadwara temple so many times. So I had a national inclination also for Srinathji. And you know, I will tell you one thing, you know, very honestly, that when I go to the temples, you know, they are called as Haveli. When I go to the Haveli in near my house, and also when I go to Nadwara or different temples of Srinathji, mostly you will find that many Gujaratis are only there. Gujaratis and then Marwaris will be there, some of them. So, you know, it is so easy to accept that sampradaya, because you become, you know, you are, first of all, we are attached to our caste. See, that is also another surrender, that we are attached to our caste, but we understand that Krishna consciousness is not dependent on caste, creed, sect, religion, country and society and all that. So we have given up that concept also, you know. Like, there are inter-caste marriages also now between devotees. That is also acceptable, right? So many things we have sacrificed. We have stopped eating outside, at least for the most of the time, you know, unless there is, like, you travel, you go outside, and then you are eating, it's a different thing. But at least we have completely rejected onion garlic, and we try to eat prasadam as much as possible. Or even if you are going outside, if you have to eat outside, at least you want to make sure that you want to offer it to the Lord, and then have it. Because our bhav is that, you know, whatever we do, we want to offer it to the Lord, and then we have to consume. right? So we should we remember the Lord. So all these things, you know, we have sacrificed, surrendered to the Lord. So it might be a basic level, but so many things are there. So if you, you know, keep counting all these things that we have been doing, there are many things you will get. Okay. Then, so what I was saying is, you know, about the Nadwara Sampradaya, it's very easy to connect and accept that Sampradaya because I'm a Gujarati. But the thing is, you know, after coming to ISKCON, you know, ISKCON is especially Gauriya Sampradaya, you know, the Bengal, because I had no connection with the Bengalis earlier. And so then to accept a new culture from India, and to make it our life and soul, and to also show enthusiasm for that, to develop enthusiasm. That's also, that is another level of surrender. To accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as non-different from Radha and Krishna, that is also another level of surrender. How many devotees get attached to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? You know, maybe few. I think as you surrender more, you know, the output should be that you should get attached to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu more and more with time. Okay. Otherwise, it's difficult to advance in spiritual life without His mercy. So you know, so many things we have surrendered. We have accepted a way of life, and we have accepted the criticism of outsiders. In spite of all these criticisms, all the chastisement that we have received from our relatives, friends, family members. We have accepted, we are following that, we are maintaining that path. In spite of all the obstacles, in spite of so many, and you know, we are tolerating so many things from outside. In Krishna consciousness also, you know, life is so difficult. It's not easy. Everything becomes very challenging. There is politics, diplomacy, envy, jealousy, all these things are there. Anger, greed, pride, all these things are there, even in the society. In our ISKCON society or Gaudiya Vaishnava society, all these things are present, but still we have continued to perform sadhana bhakti. So that is also another surrender. So at so many levels we have surrendered to, and that is what the Lord is saying. So don't think that you have not surrendered. You have surrendered many things. You have sacrificed many things. If you keep counting, then, you know, and the Lord obviously knows all these things. But I think the most important question is, what is the most important type of surrender? What is the most important and the most toughest type of surrender?
Coming out of this bodily consciousness.
Coming out of the bodily consciousness. So what does that mean?
I mean, first and foremost thing we should understand that we are not this body, we are spirit, soul and part and parcel of Krishna, and we are servants. Understanding and accepting that itself is.
Understanding and accepting, they are, you know, so understanding is one level, accepting is another level, which is probably the superior level. But much more greater level is to implement that knowledge.
Yeah.
So I think everyone here understands that we are not the body, we are the spirit soul. But are we acting like that? No. Okay, no. And what is the reason for that?
Still we have that feeling like I am, like maybe it is an ego.
Ego, yeah. So that is the most important element of surrender. The highest. So we see that it is very easy to surrender these things, so many other things. I mean, okay, I will not say it is easy, you know, maybe probably it is tough for sure. But the toughest element of surrender is definitely the ego. because the problem is that we want to be the enjoyers and we want to enjoy the material world. We want to be the controllers and we are also identifying with the body. Or you can say that, okay, we have the understanding, we have the knowledge, but somehow we are unable to act like that. We still have our requirements and we are acting on that requirement. Right? So it means that the ego has not gone. Okay? I think everyone would agree on this. I don't think anyone would say that, okay, someone is without ego. See, in the Bhagavatam purport that I shared today, are you all reading, you know, what I'm sharing in the Q&A group? What?
Did you try and catch up time? Some of it definitely happened.
Yeah, okay. Other devotees, have you all read? None of you are reading or what?
Prabhuji, I'm reading and not keeping up updated every day, but reading a few like things.
Yeah. So some, you know, special articles, you know, I even call it as like, you know, very important purport or amazing letter by Prabhupada. So, and I'm also posting certain articles or letters or purports which are confirmation of what we are discussing in the class. Like, you know, Prabhupada, what we discuss about, you know, like Shravanam and Kirtanam, hearing and chanting, it is a foundation of spiritual life. That is also mentioned of Prabhupada, which I have shared. Then second thing that I have shared is that the Guru is, you know, why the Guru is manifested in two forms, Paramatma as well as external Guru. So one is incomplete without the other, right? That is also mentioned by Prabhupada in his letters a couple of times. So that also I have shared. So I think it is important that devotees should read, you know, and they should get first-hand confirmation from Prabhupada or Shastra. You know, whatever we discuss, if there is something contradictory, then obviously some devotees can even point it out and, you know, we can try to resolve it or reconcile it. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I would definitely request all the devotees that please, you know, read what I'm sharing. It's very important. Okay, so one thing that I shared today only is about, so there is a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam which says that a person who chants the holy name but does not feel any bhav, does not express any feeling, symptoms, or change of heart, is actually considered to be a dead person, although he is living. Okay, and then Prabhupada writes in the purport that we are unable to chant the holy name, in that purport, Prabhupada says that change of heart is the most important thing. The transformation is the most important symptom of surrender to the Lord. So one has to see the transformation, the change in heart. And so Prabhupada is mentioning that here, you know, in the Bhagavatam it is mentioned, one who does not feel, you know, does not cry, or does not express symptoms of love when they chant the holy name, they are like dead bodies. Even after repeatedly chanting the holy name, if they do not shed tears of love. So the Prabhupada actually explains that, you know, there are certain symptoms of bhava. And one of the symptoms of bhava is one becomes free of ego. The pride is no longer there in the person. And he also develops external symptoms. Right? Which are called as what? A devotee who came to my class for the stage of bhakti. So we had the rasa. The rasa is consisting of five elements. So anyone remembers Indal Mataji, Raji Prabhu? Which are the five ingredients of rasa? What are the external symptoms? So I was explaining about voluntary actions and involuntary action.
Yes, I mentioned.
Right? Yeah, so I think probably you must have forgotten because you had not written it down. Or probably you did not hear the class
if
again.
If you give me one clue, maybe I will get to it.
What?
If you get some clue, I will get to it. I mean, to remember. Involuntary want to eat, but there are five types of rasas, you said, no?
Five ingredients. Because rasa is consisting of, so rasa is mellow, and that mellow is actually a mixture of five things. You know, so this external symptom is sattvic bhav.
There's one is right? Constant, one comes in spurts, and sattvic bhav bata rahe hai na?
Yeah, so sattvic bhav, so the rasa has vibhav, the rasa has sthayi bhav, then it has anubhav, it has sattvic bhav, and it has vyabhichari bhav. So sattvic bhav is the external manifestation of the symptoms or voluntary actions. Anubhav is the... So there are external actions which a devotee will perform, and there are involuntary actions or, you know, which are not in your control. So these are called as anubhav. So anyways, you know, like we discussed all these things, but these, so one is free from these, I mean, you know, one will develop these symptoms when they are at the state of bhava. Okay. So to attain bhava state means that one is free from ego. And so now connecting back to this purport, basically it means that if one is not in the state of bhava, one has not surrendered to the Lord, actually, you know, in technical language, one has not surrendered to the Lord completely. So that's the reason. Now the question is that why do we have the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in Kali Yuga? Why that is the youth dharma of Kali Yuga?
Because in Kali Yuga there are so many distractions. The Lord has made the path to reach Him also so much easier.
Yes. So, compared to austerities, meditation, yajna, temple worship, chanting of the holy name is the most simple. Everyone will agree? Chanting is the most simple way, right? Anyone can chant with no rules and regulations, no time to circumstance consideration. It's very easy, very simple. So now why it is very simple? Why the Lord has given chanting in Kali Yuga as a simple process? I think we all know that because we are all conditioned. We are all very lazy in Kali Yuga, and we are more lower than Sudras also. So that's the reason chanting of the holy name is given. But actually, what is the goal of chanting of the holy name?
Holy name is to develop the taste
of purification of the heart.
Sorry?
So, the goal of... So you ask, Abhijit, what is the goal of chanting of the holy name?
Yeah, what is the goal of chanting?
I mean, okay, so goal is to attain pure love of God.
Yeah, okay. To attain prema, yeah. So that means, so prema means what? One has to become completely free of ego.
Fully surrendered.
So basically, again, the meaning is to fully surrender to Krishna. Right? So, see, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that is the reason Prabhupada says in one purport, that Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityaja, Maam Ekam Sharanam Vraja, that abandon everything and surrender to me. So Prabhupada writes that Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, but the problem is that in Kali Yuga, you will rarely find any souls who will like to surrender to Krishna. And that is the reason Krishna has given a very simple way. So just by chanting the holy name, gradually they will surrender to the Lord. By chanting and following the instructions of the spiritual master, one will surrender to the Lord. So the goal basically is to surrender to Krishna or to accept Krishna's will. No, his ultimate will. I mean, we might have different desires. We might think differently how to serve the Lord. But then Krishna might have another plan for us. So to accept his plan, that is called surrender. And to abide by the plan, that is surrender. Okay. So ultimately, please remember, see, the goal of chanting, one can say that it is also to chant the holy name, to chant more. Because chanting is what? The sadhya. It is the sadhana and the sadhya both. So sadhana has to lead to a result. Okay, and that result or the goal is to, that goal is called as sadhya. So sadhya is also chanting. And obviously, it is the sadhya because when you advance in spiritual life, you will keep chanting more and more. And see, it is not just that you are just hearing the holy name. See, please understand one thing. A devotee who is chanting the holy name constantly does not mean that he has reached higher levels of bhakti. At higher levels of bhakti, a devotee, everything Krishna will reveal to that devotee. The name, the form, the qualities, the pastimes, all these things will gradually be revealed to the devotee. If that is happening, then it is actually the real sign of love of God. Or you are advancing in spiritual life. Constant chanting, you know, many devotees can do. Because what is constant chanting? It's just a practice. Like, you know, for example, you like to do certain things in the material world and you practice it. So you can do it most of the time in your schedule, in your day-to-day schedule, right? But it does not mean that you have attained the goal. So similarly, here also, one may chant the holy name constantly or, you know, but it's not necessary that the Lord is going to reveal to them. Okay, the Lord will reveal himself only when they surrender to him. See, that is the reason, like today also I shared one purport, another purport, where Prabhupada says, he is describing the importance of deity worship for Grihasthas. And then he is also suggesting the importance of visiting the Dham. And he is also mentioning about that if you want to visit the Dham, you want to worship the deity, you should do it according to the guidance of the spiritual master. So everything finally comes to the acceptance and willingness to obey the instructions of the spiritual master. So that is actually called surrender. So the entire goal of the Hare Krishna movement or Krishna consciousness is actually to what? To surrender to Krishna, to please Krishna, finally. So depending on what Krishna wants at a particular time from a devotee, that we have to accept. That is called surrender to Krishna. So, because the problem is that we don't know what the Lord wants from us. So, we require the help of Guru. Okay? And as we come to the level of Bhava, then we actually get direct instructions from the Lord. But before that, one has to take instructions from the Guru and one has to keep taking guidance from the Guru. You know, because they can actually give you a path. If you follow that path, then you can quickly advance. But if we try our own path, then, you know, it will be difficult. Okay, so does this make sense to everyone? So now, after reaching this kind of surrender, it is possible for him to surrender to Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the last sentence of this purport. Okay. So then, you know, what happens? Free from all dual conceptions, he becomes full in knowledge. So these are very advanced stages. Right? Free from pride. So that happens in the state of bhava. Right? So any comments or questions on this?
Clear for me.
Okay, next. Okay, I think Aditya, you read, right? So, okay, so now, yeah, Ujwala Mataji, would you like to read?
Yes, Ramji. Method Bhashaya Teshuryo Rashashanko Napavakaha Yadgatvana Nivartante Taddhama Paramam Namam. That supreme abode of mine is not illumined by the sun or moon, nor by fire or electricity. Those who reach it never return to this material world. The spiritual world, the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, which is known as Krishna Loka, Goloka Vrindavana, is described here. In the spiritual sky, there is no need of sunshine, moonshine, fire or electricity, because all the planets are self-luminous. We have only one planet in this universe, the sun, which is self-luminous. But all the planets in the spiritual sky are self-luminous. The shining effulgence of all those planets called Vaikuntas constitutes the shining sky known as the Brahmajyoti. Actually, the effulgence is emanating from the planet of Krishna, Goloka Vrindavana. Part of that shining effulgence is covered by the Mahatattva, the material world. Other than this, the major portion of that shining sky is full of spiritual planets, which are called Vaikuntas, chief of which is Goloka Vrindavana. As long as the living entity is in this dark material world, he is in conditional life, but as soon as he reaches the spiritual sky by cutting through this false parvachar tree of this material world, he becomes liberated. Then there is no chance of his coming back here. In his conditional life, the living entity considers himself to be the lord of this material world, but in his liberated state, he enters into the spiritual kingdom and becomes an associate of the Supreme Lord. There he enjoys eternal bliss, eternal life, and full of knowledge. One should be captivated by this information. He should desire to transfer himself to that eternal world and extricate himself from this false reflection of reality. For one who is too much attached to this material world, it is very difficult to cut that attachment, but if he takes to Krishna consciousness, there is a chance of gradually becoming detached. One has to associate himself with devotees, those who are in Krishna consciousness. One should search out a society dedicated to Krishna consciousness and learn how to discharge devotional service. In this way, he can cut off this attachment to the material world. One cannot become detached from the attraction of the material world simply by dressing himself in saffron cloth. He must become attached to the devotional service of the Lord. Therefore, one should take it very seriously that devotional service, as described in the 12th chapter, is the only way to get out of this false representation of the real tree. In chapter 14, the contamination of all kinds of process by material nature is described. Only devotional service is described as purely transcendental. The words Paramam Mama are very important here. Actually, every nook and corner is the property of the Supreme Lord, but the spiritual world is Paramam, full of six opulences. The Katha Upanishad 2.2.1.5 also confirms that in the spiritual world there is no need of sunshine, moonshine or stars. Na tatra suryo bhati na chandra tarakam. For the whole spiritual sky is illuminated by the internal potency of the Supreme Lord. That supreme abode can be achieved only by surrender and by no other means. Hare Krishna.
Okay, any question or comment?
So, provision here, the supreme abode can be achieved only by surrender and by no other means. So, surrender means giving up of free will, is it?
Yeah, see, basically accepting Krishna's will in 100% form, like, you know, whatever the Lord wants. Like, we become pure devotees. So, we become pure devotees means we have dissolved the ego. So like we follow everything what Krishna is saying in the Bhagavad Gita. Or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you know, he's saying that Trinapi Sunichena Taro Api Saishmana. So we, you know, tolerate things and keep continuing our sadhana. And then whatever the Lord wants, you know, we just keep doing that. We want to please the Lord in all circumstances. Even if that hurts our ego, but we still want to please the Lord. So when that happens, you know, then we are surrendered to the Lord.
Right.
Yeah. So see, one thing is there, that book knowledge is definitely theoretical, and it is definitely written in the most ideal form. It gives the highest standard, basically, right? Because, see, let's say, for example, if Prabhupada wrote here, that no need to surrender 100% just by the Guru's mercy, by my mercy, devotees at least come to 50% standard or 75% standard, then I will take care of it. Do you expect that Prabhupada would have written such a thing? Obviously not. So, you know, there are obviously, when it is in the book, you know, the standards are going to be ideal and pure. It's going to talk about the highest standard, because that is what the scripture is also talking about. Okay, but so in Kali, you know, and especially when we are in under Prabhupada's camp, the Prabhupada has, you know, he has given confession, no doubt. But for that, you know, what he wants is basically, you know, you have to give your life to Krishna at least to certain percentage, a major percentage, you know, like it should at least, like, you know, for, I think it should be around 75%, you know, that is what I can, from my understanding, from my realization and what I've heard from others, I think that 75% has to be there. If it is below that, so in other words, one has to at least come to the state of Nishtha. So that is what we also discussed in our house program, right? That beyond Nishtha, things are not in our control. And so if Nishtha, by Nishtha we please Prabhupada, then he will basically, you know, or, you know, he will ask Krishna to get us to Prema, you know, and by his recommendation, the Lord will accept it. That is the power of the Acharya. So our goal is actually not even to please Krishna. Our goal is to please Srila Prabhupada. Because we don't know Krishna. We don't know him. We know Prabhupada.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever Prabhupada has given, that standard at least devotees should follow. And now the question is that, okay, so everyone knows what Prabhupada has given, but that is also not true. If Prabhupada has given everything you know, then you don't require any Shiksha Guru also. You don't require Diksha Guru also. So it is not like that. And who knows what you are following, what you are not following. Whatever, like, you know, devotees might like certain things what Prabhupada said. So they might be following that. And they might not do certain things which Prabhupada also emphasized and repeatedly requested the devotees to do. You know, certain common things for all the ashrams, for brahmacharis, for grihasthas, for vanaprasthis and sannyasis. So it is absolutely necessary to have a living guru, you know, siksha and diksha guru, who can actually give us the dose that we require according to our conditioning. So it is not same for everyone. Right? You know, some devotees are doing certain services. They are engaged in certain services, but they are not engaged in other services. And some devotees are opposite. So we have to make a balance. Like, certain things are very common in all grihastha ashramas. You know, so most of the devotees, most of the grihastha devotees should follow that. And then, according to a personal circumstances, nature, inclination, things will vary. But, so that is the Prabhupada writes in the purport, that this is the expert guidance of our spiritual master. that this is how he trains the devotees. So today only, you know, there is one purpose Prabhupada shared about how is worship, you know, duties in the house so important for each and every Grihastha. So the spiritual master will guide them, train them how to worship the deities. You know, and it also regards to the dham visit. The Prabhupada also mentions that. So everything has to be done under expert guidance of a devotee. And that's how we feel the protection also, because if we do things independently, then we, like, you know, it's difficult to say. You'll not get the protection, you'll not get the strength, you know, because the strength and protection comes from superiors, the parampara. And so if we don't do under their guidance, then we are on our own, basically. So, yeah, I mean, you know, so this is what surrender to the Lord means, basically. So surrender in the sense that, you know, you accept the instructions of a superior and make Krishna consciousness your goal. So now, maybe you are, you know, 20% surrender, 30% surrender, 40%, 50%, that only you or Krishna knows, you know, how much we are surrendered. But the moment you start accepting the instructions of a guru and then make it a priority, you know, that means that you are soon going to surrender to the Lord. Very soon. So that's the reason, you know, in one letter that I have shared today, Prabhupada writes that you cannot serve Krishna directly. You cannot please Krishna directly. The only way is to please the guru or please the devotees. So it is not possible to attain Krishna without serving the devotee. A Prabhupada has written clearly in the letter. I don't know if you have read, some devotees have read or not, but this is the process. You know, we don't approach Krishna because we don't know Krishna. And if we try to approach Krishna, what will happen? Complete surrender. And even after complete surrender, no perfection. There is no guarantee that we'll attain. That's what the sloka, you know, in the Varampuran Krishna says, if a devotee worships me directly, perfectly also, there is no guarantee we'll attain perfection. But if a devotee will please my devotee, serve my devotee, worship my devotee, and even if he worships me imperfectly, there is a guarantee that he will come to me. So, which is a safer side? To serve the devotees, right? So, we want to please Prabhupada, ultimately. That is our goal. And so, we have to set our life in such a way that at least you have to have a focus that, okay, after a few years, I want to now, you know, completely dedicate to Prabhupada. That is the only goal. And so, in between that, you know, if you have great desires, if you want to satisfy them, that's fine. But then at least at a certain point of time, that's the reason in the Vedic culture, we have this system of retiring at the age of 50, entering Vanaprastha. You know, because Grihastha life is meant for, it has some license for enjoyment. And so you are, once you are done with the license, I mean, done with enjoyment, license is gone, it's expired. So then you have to, so don't renew the license. You have to throw the license. Okay, that means that you take Vanaprastha and then finally you aim for sannyas. So now it's not necessary to have, you know, to take sannyas, you know, as today only, you know, another letter I shared, Prabhupada, which in there he mentions to Jayan and Prabhu, our, you know, exalted Prabhupada disciple, who is the main devotee in charge of the Rath Yatra. He was the one who, the first devotee who started the Rath Yatra in San Francisco. So he wrote to him because he was having this confusion of whether he should remain Grihastha, Brahmachari, or he should, you know, sannyas and all. So Prabhupada said that we are Vidvati Sannyasi. Vidvati Sannyasi means a devotee who knows things as they are. And so that means that if a devotee is realized and can understand that Krishna consciousness is the goal and he is working for that goal, whichever ashram he is, if he is doing that, then he is actually equivalent to a sannyasi. So that is not so, ashram is not so important. On the other hand, Prabhupada says that zero devotees or Zuda Sannyasi, they might make a show of chanting the holy name constantly, but they are not detached. They are not, they are attached to sense certification. So that is also a show. Right? So, and in the letter, Prabhupada mentioned these things. See, that is the reason I share the letters, you know, because we are so relevant things that Prabhupada is mentioning, what we are discussing in the class. It's all connected. So, you know, again, I request the devotees that they should, you know, try to read the letters or try to read what I'm sharing. Okay. Yeah, so is this clear?
Mr. Vijay.
Yeah. So, you know, see, right now in Gyastha Ashram, some of us are initiated, some are not. But we still have, you know, Diksha Guru, we have Siksha Gurus who are there. So, Gyastha life means they have some independence, definitely. It's not like, you know, Brahmachari Ashram, where you are just following the instruction of Guru and doing whatever he's saying. Gyastha means, you know, they have independence. But finally, we have to come out of that independence at some point of time in the future. That is what Prabhupada requested, you know, he emphasized, and that is what the Shastra is also saying. That at least at the age of 50, one has to come out of that. And that means that you should have a strong sadhana in Gyastha Ashram itself in order to come to that kind of conclusion or in order to come to that level of realization or to create that kind of detachment. So one has to have a very strong sadhana in their Gyastha Ashrams, which means, you know, basically hearing, chanting, reading. These three things are the most essential. And then obviously, deity worship, dhamvas, they are also very important. So the entire, everything is, you know, it's in the training process. Whether it is brahmachari, whether it is Gyastha, one has to come to the realization that we have to sacrifice, dedicate our life for the mission of, to please the Lord. You know, finally we should attain that kind of realization. So we have to work on that. We have to plan our lives in such a way to come to that stage at some point of time. Now the big question is that, okay, so I'm targeting 50 years that I want to retire and I want to engage full time in the service of God. But now what if, let's say, you are, you know, as a normal Gyastha, you are enjoying in the material world also, at the same time you're also doing bhakti, not at the cost of bhakti, but you are also having some desires, you're enjoying the material world. So then what if we don't reach the age of 50? Then what will happen? So, you know, so then are we contributing about 75% of the, you know, service to the Lord? What do you think? Can all of you give some answer? Because we all are Gyasthas here. I don't think anyone is a Brahmachari. Everyone is a Gyastha in our group. So what do you think? You have long-term plan, you know, maybe right now you don't want to surrender, you don't want to, or you have some other priorities, commitments, but, and then you set, you know, set a target for yourself after 20 years, 30 years, or maybe after 10 years. First of all, the question is, have you set a target for yourself? Do you have some plan in the future, you know, to maximize your Krishna consciousness, to retire on a timely basis? That's the first question. If you have planned, then the question is that what happens, you know, like if in between something will happen to us, then what? Then let's say, you know, at that point, we have just contributed our 30%. I mean, given our 30%, 20%, 30%, 40%, whatever. I think this is a question for the question and answer session, probably. Because it's not necessarily connected to the class.
Hello.
Sorry?
Correct, Prabhuji. We can elaborate more on this.
Yeah, we can elaborate on that. Yeah.
But as we are getting more into the subject, it tends to have an effect on the way we lead our life. So life then automatically takes that kind of a route where your involvement in Krishna activities is increasing. If we look back, we see that is probably happening. As long as we do not, we ensure that our chanting is not reducing and we are in association of devotees, somehow the involvement is intensifying. Maybe at a slow rate, but certainly it must be intense. It is intensifying.
Okay. Now, okay. This is a very interesting point because, you know, I think in the letter that I shared today, so it's amazing that how I'm recollecting all the letters that I shared, you know, yesterday or today. And I think, you know, everything is bringing to that what Prabhupada is saying. So Prabhupada says there is something which is theoretical. Yeah, so this is given in the purport, I recollect, because he's talking about deity worship. And so he's saying that, you know, as far as we are hearing and we are also implementing, you know, because he's saying that what we hear and what we read is theoretical. And unless you implement it, it is not, you know, unless it becomes practical, it is not going to be realized, right? So, see, hearing and chanting is good, but now comes the service. Okay, and so Prabhupada is actually writing in the context of deity worship, and he says that deity worship is actually the practical service of what we hear, what we perfectly hear from the perfect sources. Okay, so service is also very important. Please, you know, don't you know, disconnect service with regards to hearing and chanting, because unless you serve, unless you take some responsibility, your hearing and chanting is almost on the theoretical platform. And again, it brings the same, you know, issue that if you only hear and chant and you don't take, you know, preaching responsibilities or any particular responsibility connected to the preaching mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the problem is that how will you get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Because, so what you will be probably doing is, if you are just doing bhajan, the bhajan is not going to give you so much strength, because our bhajan is actually more or less very offensive in nature, you know. So it will not have so much strength. So what is practical service now? Right? So that is very important aspect, because this is a very interesting point, you know, that, okay, our hearing is increasing, our chanting is increasing, but then what is the output in terms of service? Like, you know, for example, if you are receiving knowledge, it is your responsibility to share the knowledge also. If you are getting a lot of help from devotees, it is your responsibility to give help to others also. So that's a practical service. So, you know, I've mentioned this many times in our class, that something theoretical and something practical, and practical and theoretical, and Prabhupada mentioned the same thing in this purport. If you read the purport about the deity worship, you know, Prabhupada is recommending the Grihasthas to worship deity in the house, then he's mentioning the same point, that theoretical and practical things, you know, they are two different things. So whatever we are hearing and reading, it should be also be implemented in the term, in the sense of that we want now to take some commitment and responsibility for the service of Lord. Right? We want to, you know, so that comes in the form of Vaishnava Seva and Jivdaya. So you Vaishnava Seva basically means, you know, you take up Prabhupada's, you know, certain things that you like, you know, like, you know, there are so many areas where you can contribute and you can, you know, so that is that. That's practical service. So this should also come. And as we know, you know, we was preaching is a shortcut to go back to Godhead. This we have heard from all great Vaishnavas in ISKCON. Preaching is a shortcut. So if you don't preach, if you are only doing bhajan, it will, you know, have a slow effect, gradual effect. And, you know, so it all depends. You know, you see, that's the reason I'm saying again and again that it's very important, you know, for the Grihasthas to plan out like that what I want to achieve now, what is, you know, what does my Guru want now from me? So that is very important. That is called surrender. It's not about, see, and you know, one another thing is that, okay, someone might be able to chant and hear more. But how does one know whether you're chanting and hearing of, you know, like if it is increasing? Like, you know, one can chant, one can keep chanting, you know, for years, for lifetimes. But how does one know whether one is advancing or not? So, see, you have to equate everything with the level of surrender also. I'm pretty sure that many devotees, they are able to do a lot of hearing and chanting. But how many of us are actually trying to surrender to superior instructions? How many are taking regular guidance from senior devotees and trying to implement that? That is also an important question. So it has to go together, you know. This is my, you know, understanding from what, you know, I have read, heard, and seen. Does this make sense, too? I mean, you know, I think all the devotees, you know, probably they should understand this point. You know, it's a very simple point. All the things should go together. If some devotee say that, you know, my chanting hearing is increasing, but their surrender level is still the same, then what is the effect of their hearing and chanting? If they have not come to a point where they want to do something for Prabhupada, then again the same question is there. So it becomes theoretical. It remains theoretical. Right? So it has to expand into the areas of Vaishnava, Seva, and Jivya. We have to take some responsibilities. So does this make sense? Now obviously, see, each and every devotee circumstances are different. Now some devotees might have some obstacles and they are not able to clear those obstacles. So for them, probably it is just advised that they focus more on hearing and chanting. And then when the time comes, you know, they can serve more. For some devotees, they don't have obstacles, they can do more. So it all depends on, you know, individual circumstances finally. See, whatever we are discussing in the class, it's all general, it's all common, you know, common thing for everyone. But whether a devotee should do it or not, that is up to the individual circumstances and their guidance from their respective gurus. Right?
Okay.
Any devotees, they have comments about it, question or any doubt? See, it is very, very, very practical and easy to understand this concept. Why? Because in our family also, what are we doing? What are we doing for our family members? That is output. That is called output. We just don't tell them that, okay, we just love you, we'll do anything for you. But if you don't do anything for them, then the output is zero. And so they will feel that, you know, this person is just speaking. He does not actually really love us. But for our family, we go out of the way to make them happy. So similarly, now Krishna has become our family member. And so, you know, we want to repay him back. We want to repay Srila Prabhupada also. See, like, you know, one devotee was telling me that what, you know, like somehow if I die on some particular, you know, pious day, Ekadashi or some you know, appearance of disappearance of Vaishnava or the Lord's appearance, then such a wonderful thing. And I immediately told that devotee that, you know, if I would be in your place, the first thing, you know, I would basically want is, you know, I will feel very guilty that I don't want to die like that. You know, I want to give something to Prabhupada in return because he has given us so many things. He has given us, I mean, he has given everything ready-made to us. And then if we don't, at least, you know, if I cannot build one temple for Prabhupada, I will feel miserable. I don't want that kind of thing. In fact, even if I die, I would still pray that I want to come back and I want to please Prabhupada. I at least give some contribution, at least, you know, that Prabhupada will, at some corner, some devotee made some contribution. At least that much feeling Prabhupada gets, that's a big thing. So, see, it is in one sense, it is not about going back to Godhead. You know, it is about developing love for the Lord. And for, you know, for that, we have to do some practical service also. We have to do something which the Lord will always remember. So the contribution, you know, has to be there, you know, something we have to do. So Prabhupada did so much, you know, he gave so much to us. And, you know, obviously, I think any devotee would feel that they want to give something to Prabhupada, you know, something. Whether it be book distribution or temple opening or prasadam distribution or, you know, whatever, so many services, cow protection, varnashram, so many things. That will actually, when you do that, that will be going back to Godhead at that moment. You will feel that you are now like, you know, you are completely ready for that. So only when a, you know, disciple will please the guru sufficiently, then only the disciple will actually think that, okay, now if my guru will call me or Krishna will call me back to Godhead, like, I'm okay with that. But unless that, till that time, I think it's not the work. You know, it's not the work, basically. The price is not the work. So it is very much important that, you know, we think how to repay to Prabhupada. That is very important. Okay. So yeah, I mean, you know, things are not in our control for sure. You know, we can die at any moment. Whether we have contributed or not contributed, you know, the Lord can make us die at any moment. That's a different thing. But at least, this is a desire, you know, of a sincere devotee that they want to please the Guru and then they want to go back to Godhead. Without that, you know, it feels very incomplete. There's something lacking. Okay, all right. So we can continue with the next verse. Sudhamai Mataji, are you there?
Yes, Prabhupada. Verse number 7. Mamevamsho jivaloki jiva bhuta sanadana manishastindriyani prakritistani hashadi. The living entities in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmented parts. Due to conditioned life, they are struggling very hard with six senses, which include the mind. Upward. In this verse, the identity of the living being is clearly given. The living entity is the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord eternally. It is not that he assumes individuality in his conditioned life and in his liberated state becomes one with the Supreme Lord. He is eternally fragmented. It clearly said, Sanadanaha. According to the Vedic version, the Supreme Lord manifests and expands himself in innumerable expansions, of which the primary expansions are called Vishnu Tattva and the secondary expansions are called living entities. In other words, the Vishnu Tattva is the personal expansion and the living entities are the separated expansions. By his personal expansion, he is manifested in various forms like Lord Rama, Narasimha Deva, Vishnu Murti and all the predominating deities in the Vaikuntha planets. separated expansions, the living entities are eternally servitors. The personal expansions of the Supreme Personality of Lord Godhead, the individual identities of the Godhead are always present. Similarly, the separated expansions of living entities have their identities. As fragmentary parts and parcel of the Supreme Lord, the living entities also have fragmentary portions of His qualities, of which independence is one. Every living entity as an individual soul has its personal individuality and a minute form of independence. By misuse of that independence, one becomes a conditioned soul, and by proper use of independence, is always liberated. In either case, he is qualitatively eternal as the Supreme Lord is. In his liberated state, he is free from this material condition and he is under the engagement of transcendental service unto the Lord. In his conditioned life, he is dominated by the material modes of nature and he focuses the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As a result, he has to struggle very hard to maintain his existence in the material world. The living entities, not only human beings and the cats and dogs, but even the greater controller of the material world, Brahma, Lord Shiva and even Vishnu, are all parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord. There are eternal, not temporary manifestations. The word kashadi, struggling or grappling hard, is very significant. The conditioned soul is bound up, as though shackled by iron chains. He is bound up by the false ego, and the mind is the chief agent which is driving him in this material existence. And the mind is in the mode of goodness, his activities are good. And the mind is in the mode of passion, its activities are troublesome. And the mind is in the mode of ignorance, he travels in the lower species of life. It is clear, however, in this verse that the conditioned soul is covered by the material body with the mind and the senses. And when he is liberated, this material covering perishes, but his spiritual body manifests itself in its individual capacity. The following information is there in the Madhyanantinayana Sruti. Sava esha brahma nishta idam shariram martyam atishyaja brahma abhishma sampatya brahmana pashyadi brahmana srunodi brahmana vedam sarvam anu bhavadi. It is stated here that when a living entity gives us this material embodiment and enters into spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body. Spiritual body, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face. He can hear and speak to him face to face, and he can understand the Supreme Personality as he is. From Smriti also, it is understood, Vasandi Yatra Purusha Sarve Vaikunda Murtaya. In the spiritual planets, everyone lives in bodies featured like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As far as bodily construction is concerned, there is no difference between the part and parcel living entities and expansions of Vishnu Murti. In other words, at liberation, the living entity gets a spiritual body by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The words Mamai Vamsha, the fragmental parts and parcel of Supreme Lord, are also very significant. A fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord is not like some material broken part. We have already understood in the second chapter that the space cannot be cut into pieces. This fragment is not materially conceived. It is not like a matter which can be cut into pieces and joined together again. That conception is not applicable here because the Sanskrit word Sanadana, eternal, is used. A fragmental portion is eternal. It is also stated in the beginning of the second chapter that in each and every individual body, the fragmental portion of Supreme Lord is present. That fragmental portion, when liberated from the bodily entanglement, revives its original spiritual body in the spiritual sky, in a spiritual planet, and enjoys association with the Supreme Lord. It is, however, understood here that the living entity, being the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is qualitatively one with the Lord, just as the parts and parcels of gold are also called Hare Krishna.
Yeah, so one of the most important verses. And why it is very important verse?
It is stating that we are eternal, fragmental, eternal. And
yeah, fragmental parts. Yes. Yeah.
Sanatana.
So for the Mayavadis, this is what... This is actually one of the evidence from Shastra. that Omai Vamsha Jivaloke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. So it is all eternal, eternally fragmental parts and parcels. At no point of time they will merge, they will unite to become one. So it's a clear evidence saying that they are all fragmental parts and parcels eternally. Okay, and that means that there is variety. Because if you don't have variety, everything becomes one. So variety is the nature of spiritual world. Okay, any question from this purport?
Yeah, but here it is mentioned, the living entities, not only human beings and the cats and dogs, but even the greater controllers of material world, Brahma, Lord Shiva, and even Vishnu, are all parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord.
Okay.
So then just like when we say that every jiva, within every jiva, Paramatma is present. Whereas the Paramatma is the witness of whatever the jiva is experiencing, thinking, doing. Correct? Similarly, even in Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and even in Vishnu, Krishna is present as Paramatma to witness what they are experiencing.
Okay, that's a good question. So any devotees, they know? Paramatma, is he present in Vishnu, Shiva and Brahma?
Lord Vishnu is directly, he's from the Lord. So...
Yeah.
No.
Correct. So, Vishnu, there is also, you know, he's out of fashion. Then Shiva and Brahma.
And Brahma is a living entity, right? Is the topmost living entity who becomes like a Brahma.
So he's a jiva.
Yeah, he's a jiva.
Yeah, okay. So he also has Paramatma?
Yes, I feel.
Okay, and Shiva?
Here Lord Shiva means if he is Sadashiva, he is, when we talk about Sadashiva, he is not a Jiva Tattva, right Prabhu?
Okay. So he is Vishnu Tattva. And what about our Shambhu?
They are all partial representations of the Sadashiva.
Okay. So is the Paramatma present in Shiva's heart?
I think it should be present for him. Paramatma should be present in all.
Huh?
I think Paramatma would be present.
Okay. Why other deities are not answering? Because
Paramatma knows everything, na, what is going on in everybody's heart. So how Paramatma knows? Because Paramatma is a witness to everything that everybody is experiencing, thinking. And that's how he teaches them lessons, because he knows now their ego is like this, now they need to be, need some learning. And so he does the leelas which brings them that knowledge.
Okay. So other devotees, Sri Kumar Prabhu, Sudama Mataji, Angel Mataji, you are there? Aritra? Jigna Mataji, Mithul Prabhu, Mithul Prabhu is not there. So, Jigna Mataji?
Yes, Prabhuji, we are here.
Yeah, so, yeah, I want everyone's presence in the form of sound vibration, not silence vibration. So, please contribute something, like it's always good to think and to say something. It might make, it might be a mistake or it might represent something which is contradictory, but at least you have made the attempt, you have begun to think. So that itself is actually Very good. So all devotees should actually try to answer as much as possible. Sri Kumar Prabhu, are you there?
Yeah, yeah. Yes, Prabhu, I am there. I got disconnected for some time.
Okay. Yeah. So any answer?
I got disconnected.
Okay, okay. So Angel Madhuri?
Yes, Prabhu, I'm listening.
No listening. Speaking has to be there also. So, yeah, so all the devotees, they have to coax their mind to think. Now, any devotee would like to say something? Okay, so Rajiv Prabhu said that Paramatma is present in everyone. And Ujjwala Mata is saying that she is not sure about Shiva and Brahma, right?
Brahma, yes, I feel, because he is a living entity.
Okay, so Jiva is inspired by the Paramatma from within. Okay, now the question is, in order the question which comes along is that, what is the role of super soul? So as like Rajiv Prabhu was mentioning that the super soul role is to, you know, he is the one who is the witness, and he is the one who actually, from him comes knowledge, remembrance and forgetfulness. We know from the Bhagavad Gita. Now what, okay, my question is the super soul there when one goes back to Godhead? Or one becomes a pure devotee of the Lord?
Back to Godhead, no need. Super soul will not be there.
So back to Godhead, there is no Paramatma. Why there is no Paramatma?
Paramatma's role is up to guiding the soul towards the Godhead, up to that stage.
Yeah, but what is the logical answer? You know, why there is no Paramatma in the spiritual world?
Because he is in a constitutional position.
No. Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagyaniti Sabdhyate. What is the meaning of this?
Yeah, once he has gone back, he is the Bhagavan realization.
Yeah, so what does that mean? Okay, what is the difference between Brahman realization, Paramatma realization and Bhagavan realization?
Difference between Bhagavan realization?
Paramatma and Brahman. Everyone knows about Brahman. I think everyone knows the difference between Brahman and Bhagavan. What is Paramatma realization? Okay, the main difference between Bhagavan and Brahman.
Brahman means the impersonal.
Sorry.
Yeah, impersonal means what? Everyone knows Bhagavan is personal, Brahman is impersonal. But what is the, how will you explain that? So should we discuss this also in our question answer session?
Okay. Bhagwan is complete in six opulences. Brahman is the omnipresent feature of
Bhagwan. Okay, Brahman is omnipresent, but Bhagwan is also omnipresent. As we discussed
Bhagwan
earlier, that it is
Bhagwan is a person complete in six opulences,
yeah. Right. So when we talk about opulences, what does that mean? Bhagwan has Shakti. When you remove Shakti from Bhagwan, he becomes Brahman. So Shakti is the distinguishing factor between Bhagwan and Brahman realization. When you identify the Lord's Shakti, you immediately or when you realize the and identify the absolute truth Shakti along with the Shakti, then he becomes Bhagwan. Because Bhagwan means Brahman plus Shakti. So now,
what about beauty? Beauty is also a personal feature, no?
What about
beauty?
Huh?
Bhagwan has six opulences, no? Like fame, richness.
Yeah. So those the six opulences,
knowledge,
they are manifestation beauty. Of his Shakti. Without Shakti, no opulences are there.
So you're saying here is if you remove Shakti from Bhagwan, then that becomes Brahman.
Exactly. That is what I'm saying.
But beauty is also an action.
Beauty is coming from the internal potency. And internal potency is what? Swarup Shakti of the Lord. Everything is coming from the Swarup Shakti of the Lord. You talk about Balram. Balram is also internal potency of the Lord. Because we say that Balram is actually, he is manifesting the spiritual world, the material world, the paraphernalia, associates of the Lord. But then from where Balram is coming? Balram is coming from Swarup Shakti of the Lord. And so is Srimati Radharani also. And so everything is coming from the Shakti of the Lord. So whatever you are talking, the appearances, they are all coming from the Shakti of the Lord. Have you ever seen a person without appearances? When you talk about a person, it is obvious that he is accompanied by his appearances. If there are no appearances, then the person is as good as Brahman because there is no activity. There is no attractiveness. It is just something which is existing. Got this point? So that becomes Brahman. And Brahman plus Shakti becomes Bhagwan. Okay? So now where does Paramatma come into picture here? Okay, so the question is Paramatma a person? Or Brahman, or what is that?
Paramatma,
yeah, is a person, okay. Yeah, so then basically Paramatma also has some Shakti. Because as the moment you say is a person, so Paramatma is a feature. But Paramatma's feature is restricted. So it is not complete. Okay, and what is the restriction? What is the restriction? See, why I am explaining this philosophical understanding because there was your question that is Paramatma also present in all these personalities? And
okay.
I think the moment you get answer who is a Paramatma, then it will be easier for you to actually understand and get the answer that, okay, is Paramatma actually present in the living entities? And you'll understand what is the role of Paramatma. Basically, you'll understand that. Okay. And once you understand that, it does not matter whether Paramatma is present in them or he is not present. It will not matter.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So Paramatma is a person or a controller or Vishnu who is identified as the controller of the material universe. He is restricted to the material realm only. He does not go beyond the material realm, material creation.
Okay,
so you realize the absolute truth in the material world as a person, that becomes Paramatma. So that's the reason Paramatma is actually not there in the spiritual world. Because what is the use of Paramatma when you are seeing the Paramatma in front of you? You understand this point? So the purpose of Paramatma is to see the Lord is manifesting as Chaitya Guru and external Guru. So what is the reason for the manifestation of Guru? Guru is only to, you know, train us go back to Godhead. Once the job is over, there is no longer need of any Guru. Guru's job is done. The Paramatma, see, Dhruva Maharaj, when he was meditating, he was seeing the Paramatma in the heart. But then when Lord Vishnu appeared, the Paramatma then, you know, suddenly disappeared from the heart. And he got disturbed by that temporarily. And because of that, you know, he opened his eyes. And he saw that the same Paramatma is actually standing before him. So he actually came out from the heart and he came face to face with him. So please understand this fact that when Bhagwan is there, there is no need for Paramatma. Because the Paramatma's only goal is to inspire devotees to connect with him. Okay, and the Paramatma feature is a restricted feature in the material realm. But in the spiritual world, you are directly in touch with the Lord. So why do you need Paramatma? Correct? So does this make sense? And another thing is that Paramatma is actually expansion of, or he is actually Shiva Dakshaya Vishnu. Please note that. Okay. So Shiva Dakshaya Vishnu, why do you want to see Vishnu when you are with Krishna? So no. And Shiva Dakshaya Vishnu also. Where is Narayan? Where is the position of Narayan? And where is the position of Shiva Dakshaya Vishnu? Shiva Dakshaya Vishnu is expansion of that Narayan. Because Narayan is surrounded by Chaturvya. You know, Narayan is actually the Prabhu Prakash expansion of Radha and Krishna in Vaikuntha. With, you know, the same Lord, the same goddess with opulences. And they have Chaturvyas, you know, the Sankarshan, Vasudeva Sankarshan, Pradyumna Nirudh. Their expansion, you know, the second Mahasankarshan, Mahasankarshan's expansion, one of, you know, that expansion is Mahavishnu. And then Mahavishnu expansion is Garbho. And then Garbho to Shiro. So where is the position of Shiro and where is the position of Narayan? So even you go to Vaikuntha, Narayan is greater than Shiva Dakshaya Vishnu. So in other words, you are seeing the Narayan in the complete form. So you understand, so this is a temporary form, you know, this Shiva Dakshaya Vishnu in the material realm. It is not present in the spiritual realm. This is a Paramatma feature. Okay. So now, coming back to the topic, you know, that, see, Vishnu is Vishnu. So there is no question of a Vishnu present inside a Vishnu. I think everyone agrees on that, right? So Vishnu is Vishnu. Okay, there is no Paramatma in Vishnu. He is the Ishwar. He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. All Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is also there. So even though he is Shiva Dakshaya Vishnu, He is restricted in the material world, but he is also the supreme personality of Godhead because he is also the Ishwar Tattva. He is also the supreme controller.
Okay. That means that all Brahm, Paramatma would not be present.
Of course. See, okay, see now one more concept is there. That when Ramchandra appears, all the avatars, various Narayan and all these, you know, 24 different forms of Vishnu, they will all merge in the body of Lord Ramchandra. And when Krishna comes, all the incarnations of the Lord, they merge in the body of Krishna. So that's the reason we also say that he is most complete. Krishna is having, you know, he is possessing maximum qualities compared to any other incarnations. And then Lord Ramchandra is there. And below Ramchandra is Narayan. So when Rama is there, all the incarnations are merged in the body of Lord Ramchandra. But that is not to inspire him from within. Okay. It's not that the Paramatma feature is present in Lord Ramchandra. It is the all the Vishnu Tattvas there present in body of Lord Ramchandra because he's the soul of Vishnu Tattvas. In that context it is mentioned that Lord Ramchandra is the source of all Vishnu Tattvas. And in that context also the same can be said about Krishna, that he is also the origin of Lord Ramchandra. Okay? Okay, so Vishnu is out of question here. Coming to Shiva. Now, see, with Shiva and Brahma, you know, with Shiva is also actually the supreme controller. He is also Ishvara. But he is affected, you know, because of his tamoguna. You know, he is in touch with the material energy. So sometimes he gets affected from that. Okay, so, but he still, Shiva Tattva is neither Jiva nor Vishnu. But still he is possessing the qualities of Vishnu. Certain things he is not possessing, as we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita Bhakti Samrita Sindhu, that he has 55 qualities compared to Vishnu. Right? And Brahma has 50 qualities. So Brahma being the highest living entity, the foremost living entity in the universe. Now you see, one thing about Brahma is that he is directly in touch with Vishnu because he is getting that inspiration from within. Okay, like he is hearing Papa from within and then he goes into meditation. And then after 100 years of penances, austerities, finally he sees Vishnu face to face. So, you know, the reason why I explained the concept of Paramatma is that it's not necessary that Brahma also has to be, you know, that Paramatma has to be there in the, you know, Brahma's heart. Because one thing is there, that Brahma is directly in touch with Vishnu as the original creator. Okay. So it's not necessary that the Paramatma feature has to be there in Brahma. You know, whenever there is some disturbance, obviously the Lord can inspire Brahma from within. That's a different thing. Okay, but to say, you know, that Paramatma is also present in Brahma, you know, I'm not like 100% sure about it because it also depends on Brahma being a pure devotee of the Lord. Now, the devotees who are pure, you know, Prabhupada says that, you know, they talk to Krishna face to face. They can see the Lord face to face. They can talk to him face to face. In fact, Brahma was the one who actually had shook hands with Vishnu. In the Bhagavatam, you know, it is mentioned. So it is not necessary that, you know, no, Brahma, you know, he is the one who actually can quite frequently visit Vishnu. Or he can have that, you know, direct connection with Lord Vishnu. And then when you talk about direct connection to Vishnu, it basically means that the Paramatma feature is not present, you know, it comes outside. Because, you know, the darshan of the Lord is basically more complete than the Paramatma feature of the Lord. So when Brahma is having darshan, he is taking guidance from Vishnu, he is getting resurrection from Vishnu, that itself means that he is actually you know, it does not matter whether Paramatma is there or not. And so with Shiva also the same thing, because he is also Ishwar Tattva. So it's, you know, that aspect is not there. You know, the Paramatma feature, I don't think it is there in Shiva either. You know, because they are, see, Shiva is obviously the special incarnation of the Lord. He is also, like, you know, to some degrees also the Vishnu Tattva. You know, and to some degrees also Jiva. That's why Shiva Tattva, because in certain pastimes, certain leelas, he's showing his Vishnu forms, or I mean, you know, the Vishnu qualities and tendencies. But in certain leelas, he's acting like a Jiva. So that's why the Shiva Tattva is very complex to understand. You know, I have explained that earlier. You know, in certain leelas, he's like the supreme controller, and certain leelas, he's actually behaving like a Jiva, ordinary Jiva. Right? So, again, you know, Lord Shiva is also actually directly in touch with the Supreme Lord. Right? He is directly in touch with Mahavishnu. So, like that. So we have to actually understand what is the role of the Paramatma first. And if you understand this concept, then actually we can know that there is no need for Paramatma to be present in Shiva's heart or in Brahma's heart also. Okay? Because the Lord is directly resonating with them. And in certain, you know, so obviously the Lord can inspire them from within also, but they are also in touch with the Lord directly. Right?
Okay.
So, see, here it is, so basically, Prabhupada is not mentioning that, you know, that the Lord is in their heart also. He is just mentioning that they are all parts and parcel of the Supreme Lord. I think the living entity. I mean, all part and parcels of the Supreme Lord.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Yeah, okay, so got disconnected. Yeah, so now, like, okay, anyways, but does this make sense, Prabhu?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, other devotees?
Yes, Prabhu.
Okay. Ujjwala Mataji?
Yes, Prabhu. Clear room.
Yeah. Okay, all right. So we'll continue next week now. 8 words. So certain questions we can, you know, you have any questions like this, you know, we can also discuss in Q&A.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna, Dhanu Pranam.
Okay. Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Dhanu Pranam.
Thank you.